All right, here we go.
Once again, Reggie in the studio. Yes, sir. Look at you. No food today. Well, we're a little earlier today, right? Yeah. But you'll be leaving probably another, once we get done, right? You'll be going to your favorite sub shop. How about Jersey Mike's? I saw a sign for that. Maybe there's one you should check out. Right now, just take care of Chicago Gym, all right? How are the levels? They look good in here. All right, yes. He mouths to me, is talent ready? Yes, talent is ready. Talent is always ready. When microphone is on, talent is ready. So let's light this candle, and that will make more sense as this podcast continues. Ready? We'll be going in 3, 2, 1. Oh, wait a minute. Got to do the three S's. Star, smile, strong. Now we can do the official countdown. Houston, we have no problems here. 3, 2, 1. Let's do liftoff. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. One of the few podcasts to achieve the Good Housekeeping's podcasting seal of approval. So you know that you are listening to a quality podcast. Not many have that designation, but we have it, and we are proud to brag about it. You just don't call the Good Housekeeping people. What are we going to talk about today? Oh, I should say, of course, as we are lighting this candle right here, it'll make more sense. Speaking of lighting the candle and launching, I'm going to get my landing page. Oh, this is all making sense. It will in a few minutes. And it's unlike some landings on lunar surfaces, this is an easy landing. You just go to WGNplus.com, go to their entertainment section, and then you hit the prompt that says Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and then you will have your own landing. On 163 previous podcasts, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to podcast number 164. So, the eagle has landed, Houston. No problems so far. And I throw a lot of that jargon in there because what I wanted to talk about today is something that I hope every one of you who is listening to this podcast is aware of. Not just some, not just most, but every one of you is aware that this week on July 20th, 2019, we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of a monumental achievement in human history. And that may sound like hyperbole on Red Bull, but no, that's the truth. July 20th, 1969, man broke the boundaries of his and her own planet and went outside of its atmosphere to another heavenly body known as the moon and took exploration to all new heights, figuratively and literally, as well as broke boundaries that, you know, 2,000 years before would have been thought of as pure fantasy. And it's been 50 years, and hopefully you are aware of the Apollo 11 anniversary and the landing on the moon on July 20th and the walking on the moon of two of our astronauts, the late Neil Armstrong, the first man to ever step foot on the moon, and Buzz Aldrin, who is still alive. who also joined him. Michael Collins was the third person on that mission. But unfortunately, someone had to mind the ship. While those two guys went down on the moon and had all the fun, Michael Collins had to make sure the mothership was still orbiting so the three of them could get home. Isn't that the way it always is? The one person always has to lose out on the fun. But the human race did not lose out on the fun on July 20th and in the years after that. Sadly, not in the many years and decades after that, in terms of the United States NASA space program really continuing the amazing progress and the amazing accomplishments that 1969 signified. I think if you would have talked to people in 1969, the day on July 20th, when Apollo 11 landed, if you'd have talked to people back then and said, 50 years from now, given how we are on the moon right now in 1969, we just landed a man on the moon, what do you think is going to be happening in 50 years? And I wonder and I hope and I wish that there are some people and some predictions somewhere on old newsreels and recorded news programs or in articles, or at least some predictions by people in the know, scientists and others. Because I would think that after that monumental achievement of sending a man to the moon, that most people would have thought 50 years ago, that by 2019, we'd be doing more than just celebrating the 50th anniversary of landing on the moon. We would be probably having a party on Mars or on the moon or in a space station or a colony or something, much more than what we have today. And the space program has always been controversial. And I bring this up because, as I said before, I think everybody should know about this. Hopefully this anniversary just does not go by without some real, real commemoration. I was born, but very young. I have vague memories of it. I was, about 5 years old. But it was such a huge deal that I do believe I have real memories, as opposed to perhaps memories later that I would attribute to that time. I really do believe that I do have memories of that, but maybe I don't. I do know that my mom was, she was in outer space with excitement over this. I think she was excited to think that this happened in her lifetime. And thanks to her being such a conscientious pack rat, and while I've had to throw away a lot of stuff that she did keep for whatever reason, thankfully she left enough that I could be judicial about it. As I told you, my phrase in throwing away things or keeping things is, if it doesn't pass muster, if it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster, meaning it goes out. But one thing I have saved is my mom kept many of the newspapers from the moon landing day and a few days after, and a lot of other, commemorative photos that were available. I mean, when we landed on the moon, this country was space crazy. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins were rock stars. They were bigger stars than Mick Jagger and the Beatles and Michael Jackson and Prince and Madonna and Bruce Springsteen and Cardi B and Beyonce and whoever you want to mention, and deservedly so. And I'm talking about this today because I've always felt that it is a huge, huge disservice on our part as Americans, and certainly I believe it's a condemnation on our educational system that everyone in this country, and myself included, I have to put myself in here. I'm no better than the rest. We should know by heart, without even a flinch, the name of every astronaut who left this Earth and went into space, whether it was orbiting the Earth, orbiting the moon, landing on the moon, walking on the moon, space shuttles, space stations, anyone who has left this Earth and gone into space, we should know every one of those names, just like we know our favorite baseball player, our favorite recording artist, our favorite Instagram personality, our favorite internet influencer. More people can rattle off all the Kardashians' names than can probably name the three people that were on the Apollo 11 mission. That's not even an exaggeration. And that is a huge, huge mark on our country, because every one of those people who left this Earth, who sacrificed their lives, literally, and several did, three astronauts died on the land, on the launch pad due to a fire in the capsule. Among them, Gus Grissom, who had been on many flights before, died in the capsule on the launch pad. A fire in that capsule. If you've ever been to the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., and please, I'm begging you to go there someday. It's something that every American should see. Every person, every proud person of the human race, forget about American, everybody should go to the Washington, D.C., the Museum of the Air and Space Museum, and see the lunar module, these rockets, the capsules that these astronauts went to the moon and back in. The cramped quarters, the rudimentary technologies based on what we have today. It was an amazing feat. It's an amazing feat today. And back then, we didn't have the kind of computer power and strength and knowledge that we have today. It's amazing what those people did 50 years ago. I urge you, you have the internet. You have streaming services. There is so much information available to you, and it is so easily accessed today. There are no excuses. If our educational system has failed us, then we need to take it upon ourselves to educate ourselves, whether you're 15 or 65. You can do it. So go online, and if you don't know about the Apollo 11, and if you don't know about the United States space program in its infancy and how it became not only something that was a moment of history, but also the political aspects in the 50s and 60s as the Cold War with Russia raged on, there's a whole political side which is intriguing and interesting as well. And I think the space program and its achievements have gotten really the short end of the stick in terms of our general knowledge in this country. Every astronaut's name should be known like George Washington's name. It should be top of the head. And certainly the three astronauts, not just Neil Armstrong, certainly first man on the moon, no doubt, no question. He gets the props. Yeah, Buzz Aldrin, and yeah, the third guy, whose role was just as important in the orbiting capsule, waiting for the two guys on the moon to come back so they can all get back. Michael Collins. Don't forget Michael Collins. of the three Apollo astronauts. He's frequently forgotten. And I guess I'm on my soapbox because over the last several weeks, there's been quite a few documentaries on television detailing the genesis of the space program, dating back to Sputnik in the 1950s, which was the first satellite to be launched into space by the Russians. And it took the world, and it certainly took the U.S. by complete surprise. And as I said, during this Cold War era, where we were in deep competition with the Russians for domination and the perception of a better system of government, communism versus democracy, this rattled the United States. It rattled the general public in terms of their own safety and their own confidence in being the best and greatest country in the world. It rattled the military. What would or was Russia capable of? Were they going to arm space now? It rattled the politicians and lawmakers and the president to say, whoa, do we need to begin to look at space as a new area for investment in terms of knowledge and the future? It shook this country to its core. It really did. I would urge you to go and search out documentaries. I've been watching one on PBS. It's called Chasing the Moon. And I'm sure it'll be on again, and I'm sure you can find it somewhere. It's excellent. 3-part series about the genesis and the entire story of how it started and some of the people that were behind it. I learned so much by watching this. And that's why I urge you all, because as I said, this should be common knowledge. This was an amazing feat to have been accomplished by the human race. And it really, I think, is a reflection on today's society. I wonder, do we have the ambition and the drive and the vision to do something that bold without really knowing if we could do it? Today, we're all worried about, you know, what apps we can create to make money. We're worried about, you know, how to get our pizzas faster to our house, or how to use our phones and our apps to get a free parking space, or to find a way that our jeans could fit better by taking a picture of it and having it tailored online. That's where our big visions are today. 50 years ago, we were looking at space. We were looking at that untapped frontier. True exploration. That's true boldness. As I said, I learned things and learned about people that I never heard of. And my fault, certainly. But as I said before, our educational system's fault? Yeah. And I went to grammar school, high school, and college. And I didn't know any of this stuff. And I went, and I was in grammar school when we were still flying to the moon throughout the 70s, and men were walking on the moon. And yet this information somehow was not trickled down to us, was not taught to us. I don't understand that. But today we have such a wealth of information at our fingertips. Just for 1 minute, stay off Hulu, stay off Netflix, stay off Pandora, stay off Instagram, stay off Twitter, and go on Google and look up Apollo 11. Look up the NASA space program in the 50s. Look up Yuri Gagarin. Do you know who that is? Does that name mean anything to you? Yuri Gagarin? Does that mean anything to you? If it doesn't, you need to look it up. I'm not going to say anything more. Does the name John Glenn mean anything to you? Look it up. Does the name Alan Shepard mean anything to you? Look it up. Does the name Werner von Braun mean anything to you? I didn't know who this person was. Look it up. We would never gotten to the moon without a man named Werner von Braun. I never knew who he was. Amazingly interesting story. The fact of the matter is that both the Russian space program, which was very advanced and far ahead of the United States initially, as well as the United States space program from its infancy, ironically, was headed up, both sides, Russia and the United States, headed up by former Nazis. How about that? Hitler's Germany was looking into rockets and missiles and were highly advanced in that area. And obviously these scientists then took that initial information and looked farther on. Well, if we can shoot a missile from Germany to the United States, can we shoot a missile from the Earth to the moon? That's what I'm talking about, vision and ambition and drive and wonder. I don't know if we still have that today, but these people did. And they deserve to be recognized, and they deserve to be known, and that history deserves to be known. Werner von Braun, B-R-A-U-N, V-O-N, and Werner is with a W. But look him up. Do you know who Joseph Kittinger is? Do you know who David Simons is? Do you know who Clifton McClure is? In the late 50s, in 1955 through about 1958, these three guys went up and they were the first people to leave the Earth's atmosphere. They went, and not a rocket, they went over 90,000 to 100,000 feet in the air. In a balloon, a helium balloon, to test the effects of cosmic rays and to see how the human body reacts at such high altitudes for one day, using that information to get into the bigger puzzle as to how do we get into space and can man survive in space and be able to function, and if he can, what will he or she need in order for the bodily functions to continue to work in terms of oxygen and other types of basics for the body to work? These guys went up in a balloon. It was a project called Man High. I never heard of this. Man High. Those three guys went up there in a balloon. Just like those helium balloons you see. Obviously, the containers they were in were, you know, rigged up for with oxygen and other things, since given how high they were going, 100,000 feet in the air. Just so you know, most planes fly 36,000 feet in the air. Almost three times as high these guys went. In a balloon. Not in a steel tube with wings, in a helium balloon, in order to gain knowledge. That is an amazing. I never heard of this. Those three guys, those names should be known. Kittinger, Simons, and McClure. Kittinger, in fact, went up again, and this is, I was watching this special once again on PBS called Man High. Look it up. Find it somewhere, please. I was in shock. They wanted to see not only how high could man go and the effects on a human's health as they went into the stratosphere. In fact, I should mention this Clifton McClure. He went over 100,000 feet. When he landed, his body temperature was 108 degrees. And when he landed, he had a big smile on his face. 108 degrees. If anybody knows anything about fevers, you know that at 103 or 104 or 105, you know, it's serious stuff here. This guy was in such perfect physical shape that his temperature was 108 because of going that high into the stratosphere. Kittinger was the first man to do this. He went about 90,000 feet the first time. And he had to bring it down, listen to this, because somebody attached the oxygen valve backwards. And so instead of him getting oxygen, it was going out of his capsule in his tube that he was in, connected to this helium balloon. So there's a certain point where he noticed that he was losing oxygen and he had to abort his mission. Someone put the valve on backwards. But how brave is this guy? He went back up again because after they had attained some valuable information about how high man could go in the atmosphere and the effects it would have, valuable information, certainly in the infancy of our space program, but what about if something went wrong? How could they eject an astronaut? And could they survive having to abort the mission and eject out of some kind of a vessel? And could they come down through the different levels of atmosphere without collapsing or getting unconscious or dying? So without really knowing, talking about a human guinea pig, Kittinger went up to 100,000 feet. Amazing. And get this. In order to test if an astronaut has to eject himself from the capsule and fall to Earth and find out what the effects would be, this Kittinger goes up 100,000 feet and jumps out of the balloon willingly and lands on the Earth to talk about it. Can you imagine a free fall of 100,000 feet? As I said to you before, commercial planes go about 36, 37, maybe 40,000 feet high. This guy was more than double of that, and he jumped out of the plane, of his balloon, willingly with a parachute. And they had some, you know, oxygen helmets and things like that in order to calibrate the kind of oxygen he would need going through the different areas as he fell and the different levels of the atmosphere until he got to a point where he would have a normal ability to breathe and have normal oxygen. But he jumped out of basically a hot air balloon gondola at 100,000 feet. That's bravery, folks. You should know the name of Joseph Kittinger. There's no question about that. I didn't know it until now, but I know it now, and I'm not going to forget it. And that was in the early 50s. I would just have to say that when you look at where we are today, there's always been a lot of controversy about our space program. If we're willing to spend billions, in the 60s, the space program cost about $40 billion in the 60s. It's a lot of money now. You know how much $40 billion was 50 years ago? But driven politically by the fear of the Russians and the Cold War, as well as a sense of accomplishment and the attainment of knowledge and the continuation of our race's ability to conquer new areas of life and accomplishment. That money was spent. And to think, can you think, I mean, here, you know, it's 2019, right? And that's just BC, you know, that's from the time of Christ. Think about in the Roman times and think about in biblical time. I mean, the idea of leaving the planet. These people thought the weather was controlled by gods. Could you imagine any of them even possibly remotely thinking that man would land on another planet? And we are now talking about going to Mars. Mars has always been the goal. It's the closest planet. It's always been a goal. It's very far. It's a difficult atmosphere and a difficult ride. But I would have thought we would have been on Mars by now. We've sent unmanned crafts up there to get pictures of Mars. And we've had things like the Hubble telescope, which have taken pictures of the different galaxies and our galaxy and space in general, which we never would have dreamed of seeing. So certainly we have progressed. But I don't think we've progressed as much as we could have or should have. And I don't know if we've lost that exploration, that sense of exploring, that a sense of knowledge, of just attaining knowledge. Our view of attaining knowledge today, as I said, is very small. The bar has really lowered, sadly. We have all this technology at our fingertips, and we use it for really useless things. But Apollo 11 in 1969, July 20th, to have landed on the moon, to have done it within 9 years of when President Kennedy made the very bold prediction that we will get to the moon in this decade era. Sadly, he was not living to see it. And I was just thinking, as I was watching one of these shows, when we landed on the moon in 1969 of July, you know, certainly Kennedy would not have been president, but I'm sure he would have been there. And don't forget, we orbited the moon, and we, I believe, in 1968, which was a huge, huge accomplishment, to leave Earth, go to the moon, go around it and come back. That was part one, to say, okay, can we get there? Can we get there and back? Yes, we can. And then the next thing was, okay, now that we've gotten there, can we land there? But so leaving from the Earth, orbiting twice around the Earth, and then propelling, going to the moon, around the moon and back, happened in 1968, I believe in October of 1968. Which means that John F. Kennedy, if he had not been assassinated, by the time that happened, no, I'm sorry, it was Christmas time. It was Christmas. It was December of 1968. Yes, it was Christmas. It was over Christmas. How ironic is that? And they showed, and in this Chasing the Moon series, they showed the families of these astronauts watching and listening to this on television. After there had been some very fatal and serious mishaps before, and you see the wives and the children just in complete stress mode as this entire 2 or 3 day mission to just orbit the Earth or orbit the moon took place in 1968. But it happened over Christmas. And so John F. Kennedy, if he hadn't been assassinated, and if he had won a second term, while by Christmas of 68, he would have, the next election in 68 would have happened, a new president would have been elected, but John F. Kennedy would have still been president until January of 1969. So at least he would have been president when we had orbited the moon, which was a huge, huge accomplishment and one step closer to landing on it. So he made this bold prediction that Americans would land on the moon before the decade's end. He would have been president to see them get one step closer. And yes, before the decade is over, that's the way he said decade in his Boston accent, July 20th, 7 months in to the last year of the 60s, we landed on the moon. It was a credit to our government, to President Lyndon Johnson, and to the senators of the day and representatives of the day to continue the space program after Kennedy's death. There's no question that when Kennedy was president, and if he had gotten another term, this was a major priority. But with Kennedy gone, there were no guarantees. Lyndon Johnson could have just said, you know what, not going to spend the money. And believe me, and this Chasing the Moon series that I saw on PBS shows, there was a lot of skepticism. 60% of the people did not feel that it was worth the money to go to the moon. NASA and the government had to do a major public relations effort to get people on board because of the huge cost. And rightly so, many people, including civil rights activists and African-American activists and minority activists, were against this, to say, if we can spend $40 billion to go to the moon, why can't we spend $40 billion on making people here on Earth have livable lives, providing housing and education and opportunity? And it was a valid point. And that's the push and pull. As I said, the space program was not always popular, and it had its opponents, because the question, and it's a valid question, as much as there has always been a thirst for knowledge and a thirst for achievement and exploration in the human psyche, it's a definite valid argument to say, but shouldn't we improve people's lives here? If we have the money to spend on that, why don't we spend it on our own people? Valid point. But at the same time, you have to weigh the consequences of, when do you look past yourself and look at bigger goals to achieve? So I do hope that in the next week or so, as you see more and more coverage of the July 20th landing on the moon, that you go to your own, or go on your own, and seek out information. You might read some articles in magazines or in the newspaper or online. Hopefully you will see some of these specials that I've been talking about, and maybe there will be more. But I think you owe it to yourself, as a member of the human race, to learn more about and fully appreciate what an amazing achievement that was, and the bravery that went on by those astronauts who got into these capsules that were basically sitting on combustible material. I mean, let's be honest. That's when they say light this candle. I mean, they were sitting on combustible material. How they made it back, to think about splashdown. I mean, think about how rudimentary that is. To get back, you know, they had to, this capsule just basically landed in the ocean with a couple of parachutes on it. When you see, it's almost like they did this with rubber bands. It is truly amazing to think that we got there with the kind of technologies and the kind of information and knowledge that we had at that time. We just surpassed logic. It was a truly inspiring time. And that story and those people deserve to be recognized and remembered. So I hope you will do this for your own sake. If you have children, I would definitely, definitely do this and sit down with them and learn with them. Because I got news for you. You most likely are going to learn with them. Because we weren't taught all this. As I said, I grew up in the 70s. I should know this like the back of my hand. We were not taught any of this. But the information is there. The footage is there. And it's at our fingertips now. There's no excuse. And I couldn't help but also think about, as I'm watching this, and as we are flying and they're landing on the moon and we're orbiting planets and things like that. And throughout these programs, talking about the space program, the term explorers is always used, which is true. We were explorers. We were no different than, Columbus and Magellan and all these great explorers who went out on ships not knowing what the heck was out there, thinking that the world was flat and that they might fall off the end. And not knowing, they're just sailing at a horizon, not knowing if there's land there. But, once again, in those days, in the 1400s and the 1300s and the 1500s, getting into a ship and just going out there without knowing where there is, without any real instruments. I mean, today we've got GPS. We take that for granted. We can't even go to the grocery store without our GPS. Think about what Columbus and the pilgrims and some of these other people that just got on ships and went across oceans. And especially people like Columbus and as I said before, Magellan and people like that, not even knowing what the hell was out there. And would they fall off the end of the world if it was indeed flat? So, yeah, those were great explorers, and so were the astronauts, and so are the astronauts. And hopefully we will continue to explore the universe. But I couldn't help but thinking how in the last 15 or 20 years, and maybe even more, how some of these explorers, especially Columbus, have been discredited by so many, and many people want to get rid of streets named after Columbus and get rid of Columbus statues, because the argument is that when he landed in these foreign lands, he raped and pillaged and took over the lands and killed the indigenous people. And, we look at it today through our prism. And I think that's very unfair of any explorer of the day who is being punished or discredited, because it took a hell of an amount of bravery. And once again, you can't take people out of their time. And in the 1400s, if you want to be mad at somebody for what Columbus did, don't be mad at Christopher Columbus for landing in the New World and either killing the indigenous people or robbing them or whatever his crimes are. Don't be mad at Columbus. If you feel the need to place blame on in Columbus's situation, place blame on Spain and Queen Isabella, because she funded his exploration. And the reason she funded it was for the sole purpose of gaining land and riches and resources from these new lands in order to make Spain more powerful and wealthy. That was, Columbus went there on a knowledge-based mission. But Queen Isabella of Spain funded it not for the attainment of knowledge necessarily or primarily, but how to expand at that time Spain, which was one of the richest and prosperous countries in the world at that time, to fill their coffers and expand their empire with more lands. That was Columbus's charge. That was why he was funded. He went out there for a scientific reason. But he never would have gotten the three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, and all the men and whatever price tag it took to go on those excursions without the money from Spain. And Spain did not fund those just because they wanted to see, was Columbus right about a flat earth or not? Columbus's job was to come back with riches and resources and ways to get back there for Spain to exploit new lands. And yes, exploit people and take over their lands. I'm not washing Columbus's hands of any possible wrongdoing in terms of when he landed here, what they did, but he's not the culprit. There's a lot of dirty hands in that. And all these explorers, that was how these explorers got to get on those excursions, because wealthy countries of the day supported them and they were expected to go there and do exactly what they did. Take over those lands, take over the resources, and then bring them back to the country that paid for the bill. So there's a lot of dirty hands here. And I think of this because they say, oh, well, you know, he landed here, you know, Columbus landed, and as I said, they raped and pillaged and stole and killed the indigenous people and stole the resources and all this stuff. And yes, that, I'm sure that happened. But that was the proviso of, you want to go and get some knowledge, you want to find out if the earth is flat, that's fine, but you better go in there and bring this stuff back. And my point is, Columbus sailed out there with no okay from the people whose lands he was out to discover. He didn't even know there were people there. He didn't even know if there was land there, right? So I'm thinking about how Columbus now has been denigrated for his explorations. But then I think about the space program. We didn't know what was on the moon, did we? That's why we went there. We had photos. We had guesses. They were landing in the Sea of Tranquility. That was the spot that they landed the lunar module on the moon, which we named, right? They had photos of the moon. They tried to find a spot that wasn't as dangerous in terms of mountains or filled with craters. But we didn't know what was really up there. My point is, did we ask the moon if we could land there? No. Just like Columbus didn't ask anybody if he could sail to the new lands. So when he got there, he did what he was supposed to do. We got there and we landed on the moon. We didn't ask anybody's permission. What if there was a race of people that lived underneath in the moon, and all of a sudden this rocket lands and we say, well, we're there to explore. And they're saying, who's this? They're here to attack us. They're here to take us over. Don't forget, we left things on the moon. We left the flag. We left part of the lunar module on the moon. We didn't ask. We didn't get permission. Just like Columbus didn't get permission. So how come it was okay for us to fly to the moon and leave stuff there and go there unannounced, but Columbus is getting a flack for landing, for going somewhere without getting permission, and then taking over the lands that he found? Didn't we take over the moon in a small way by putting our flag on there, by leaving rovers and leaving golf balls and leaving stuff up on the moon? Didn't we, in a way, do what Columbus did on the moon? Didn't we just have our way? So I have a problem. If it was okay to go to the moon, then why wasn't it okay what Columbus did? And if you don't like what Columbus did, then as I said, there's a dotted line back to Queen Isabella. And there's also a dotted line to the time. That's what countries and that's what people did. Sad to say, folks, but the human species is an animal, and it has not always been kind to the environment and to itself. And yes, we are evolving and we're trying to get better, but you can't look at past generations and centuries ago through our prism. Hopefully, yes, we have evolved. We have gotten enlightened. We have learned that we shouldn't do these things. And yes, it was terrible that they happened, but that is our history. We can't condemn those people. They were in that moment. And as I've said many times, I got news for you. If you think what you're doing is the greatest thing right now, 40 years from now, a lot of people are going to be questioning what you did. And you're going to say, well, everybody was doing it. Well, that's not good enough, because that's what Columbus would have said. That's what a lot of people from the past who are now being discredited for what they did based on our view of what's right and wrong. You cannot take people from their time. You have to. You can certainly point out what they did, but it's not fair to condemn them completely. If they were staying within the laws and within the accepted behavior of the day, yes, the behavior of the day has changed, and that's good. We're moving forward, but you can't expect someone to live outside of their times, just like you live in your times. You have your head down in your phone. You aren't paying attention when you cross the street. You're texting in your car. Is that good too? I don't know. But as I said, I hope that this week and on July 20th, you will take a little time to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, and that you will know from now on the names of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins, and you will know the work of other astronauts that went before them, whose work was just as important and just as courageous and created the stepping stones and the knowledge to allow us to land on the moon. And those that came there and came back, as well as those who sadly gave up the ultimate sacrifice, who died in the mission of gaining knowledge for us, for mankind, for doing something completely illogical, completely out of the realm of possibility, and we made it possible. I hope we can start to think like that again, because our world seems to have gotten very small. We don't seem to be striving anymore. We don't seem to be wanting to burst the boundaries of capability anymore. All we're worried about is creating a cool app, creating a cool video game. Hardly monumental ambition. 50 years ago, some people were audacious, and that's the word, to think that we could leave this earth. Whew, it still blows my mind. And we've taken that for granted, and every so often we are reminded. The Challenger explosion in the mid-80s, in January of 1986, was a huge wake-up call, and it certainly hovers around all that we do. But all of those people who were on the Challenger were aware of the risks, and they did it willingly in order to push our scope of knowledge as human beings and push our scope of achievement farther. I don't know if we'll ever get to Mars or another planet. I don't think we're ever going to live on there. The idea of colonization is pretty crazy. But the ability because these atmospheres are so are just so unlivable. But the ability to go there and have the ambition and the drive to get there, I think, it can't help but inspire people to do other things as well. We need a lot of inspiration these days, folks. But at the very least, please do what you can to educate yourself and your children and your friends. You've got it at your fingertips on this computer thing here, on your internet machines. Look up Apollo 11. Look up the space program. Look up some of these projects like the Manhigh program and see all the different influences, the political, the cultural, the religious, and the human, psychological aspects of what it means to for man to have left the earth and go to another celestial body, in this case the moon. Quite impressive. It's something we all should know about. I'm doing what I can, and I just wanted to pass this on to you because I believe that it's important. We should know the names of all those astronauts. We should know the sacrifice that they and their families gave up, and the bravery and the knowledge. And we should want to create a new generation of people that keep looking up to the heavens as opposed to looking down at their iPhones. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, episode number 146, here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thanks for downloading, scrolling, clicking, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated, and hopefully you learned a little something today. Don't forget, July 20th, 1969, Apollo 11. When you look up at that moon on some clear night, think about some people walked on that thing. Pretty cool. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screen. Houston, we've come in for a landing.